2FM. With Green Firm, a nourishing addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein your way.
Thanks to Jenny Green. It's Thursday, the 4th of March, and this is Game On.
Coming up today, Greg Allen brings us the latest from the athletics in Poland and the golf in Florida. That's cost effectiveness right there.
Yannick breaks away from the block, three from the right, alongside Erez O'Rourke, but also Behrings is going well close here, and it's Yannick, and Yannick takes it.
Stephanie Roach tells us about preparations for the start of the Airtricity women's season. And for anyone who's forgotten what a Man United goal sounds like, have a listen to this.
Aaron Wan-Bissaka, powerful run. Good ball across, and the head is fantastic from Anthony Martial.
Jeff Shepherd casts his good eye over the perfectly normal world of American sport.
Mahomes throws, pass, caught, Williams, touchdown! Kansas City jumps on top.
And Dublin footballer Shane Carty talks frankly about the highs and lows of his own journey as we talk about his remarkable book, Dark Blue.
Game on 2FM.
You can text us on 51552 or tweet at GameOn2FM and we would love to hear from you. Marie, how are we doing?
Good, yeah, lots of rugby news today, Donica.
Lots of rugby news going on. Peter O'Mahony signed a central contract for 2 years, which is great news for him and good crack around the dressing room as well, that Johnny signed one and Pete signed two. You'd be able to rub it in a little bit.
Is that so what you do now?
Ah, yeah. You'd definitely be kind of rubbing it in. You all right over there, old man? Or
you can't even keep it a secret because, like, it's publicly announced.
Yeah, it's 100% it, yeah. But, that will kind of lift guys as well, and it just gives a bit of security as well for them to play. Well, look, it is great news because, to be fair, Peter O'Mahony's a bit of a warrior. Every time he goes out in red and green, he leaves his body out there. So it is exciting to have him up and going. We did hear that we were chatting to Adam Griggs last night, and we have lost our qualifier with Spain. It's been postponed for a little bit longer, which is disappointing. But as he was saying, hopefully our women are purely focused on the Six Nations at the moment.
Yeah, well, I guess that's all they can do, really, because they just don't know what the future holds, because the goalpost keeps shifting. Their big competitions keep getting postponed. So it is difficult. And as Adam did say last night, you know, they're not professionals. They're not in bubbles. They're trying to live their lives and juggle all of this and deal with the ups and downs and the highs and the lows. So it's devastating for them, but at least they do have the Six Nations to look forward to. Yeah. Also last night, Tunica, we were speaking to Phelim Kelly about the athletics today and also Cathal Dennehy, and I think they got us very excited
they
about
absolutely
it.
Absolutely did.
We got loads of reaction to it, actually. Lots of people were really looking forward to the action, which is underway at the European Indoor Championships in Poland, and I'm delighted to say that Greg Allen joins us now. Greg, how are you?
I'm no substitute for Phelim and not even close. I heard it last night. They were great.
They're infectious, Greg, aren't they? Just the way they were chatting to myself and Marie, you just cannot watch, couldn't but go and want to watch athletics.
Actually, for goodness sake, they're young, you know. No, they're two absolutely steeped in athletics guys. You couldn't find better, honestly. And they're great. Well, certainly Phelim in the role that he is right now, operating as that almost unofficial coach to a lot of athletes, and that Dublin Track Club that he's has put together. It's not an actual competing running club in terms of competition, but what Phelim has done with that Dublin Track Club to organise especially distance runners into these groups, and they're just pushing each other on. It's a small little revolution going on, and it's brilliant for the sport. Cathal is just a great journalist and a very decent athlete as well. This is the world media mile, half mile record holder, champion I should say, Cathal Dennehy. So he turns up in the media mile, everybody else just leaves the track.
Talented as well on the track. So Greg, look, I think we are probably getting a bit excited because we've seen so many great performances over the last few months, but I think the reality is we probably need to temper our expectations a little bit. It is the European Indoors, it's the big stage, and there's going to be a lot of quality there.
Did you read my preview on RT online?
You knocked me off my perch completely.
It was sort of an antidote to the enthusiasm of last night. It wasn't. I'm not trying to be a killjoy, but the point I have been making, and because I've gone through every single race that Irish athletes have a chance of winning a medal in, and the depth is just extraordinarily strong, and both the men's 800 metres and the women's 800 metres, where we've got full complements of three Irish athletes involved. They are particularly strong. The men's is the deepest men's 800 metres field that I've ever seen at a European Indoor Championship. These are normally an extremely accessible championship. It's almost a stepping stone championship to World Championships or European Outdoor Championships, and certainly a stepping stone athlete, championship in the year of an Olympics. But there's no question that this is a really deep 800 metres for men. For Mark just to make the final, he's going to have to run two great races, because that's the quality of depth is in there. Adam Cachot is in there, the Pole who's European and world indoor champion in the past. Pierre Ambrose Boss, who's a world outdoor champion, is in there. And I guess just to make that final will be a good performance. And Mark has had a particularly difficult draw as well. His heat tomorrow, it looks pretty thick with talent. He's got Pierre Ambrose Boss, as I said, former world champion. He's got a very quick Polish athlete, Patrick Dobrek. Thymen Coopers, who really ran Mark close for the bronze-silver duel at the European Indoors back in 2015. He's in there as well. And that's just to get out of his heat, you know, and it's first three across the line, no fastest loser. So no mistakes can be made from the heat onwards at 2 minutes past seven tomorrow.
Okay, so you did say as well in your piece that, you know, medals are the currency. Do you think we're going to get any from anyone over there?
Look, it's very possible we won't. You know, that's just the realistic element of this. And the reason I'm not pouring cold water on this is pure statistics. This is pure how athletes are running. This is also, as I said, an Olympic year. And because of that, you know, athletes are sharpening. They really want to get competition in their legs, which is proper championship competition, because, of course, there were no European championships last year. So this is a pent-up field. I think there's more than 700 athletes, a record number of athletes competing in a European indoor championship. It's going to be very sharp. So if anybody's going to win a medal, and let's face it, Mark English has a real chance of winning a medal, but he's got to get into that final. But once he gets into the final, it's six athletes going for three medals, and anything can happen in the rough and tumble of 800 metres indoors. Obviously, Sheofra Cleary-Butner is fast enough to challenge for a medal because she's the third fastest ranked athlete in the field for the women's 800 metres. Nadia Power is fifth fastest in terms of times run. But they're relatively inexperienced at this level. I mean, Sheofra has run major championships, and Nadia Power is a bronze medalist from the European Under-23s 2 years ago. But this is a different level. This is senior athletics, and this is the first time that Sheofra will be going into a major championship with a real chance of winning. And this doesn't have pacemakers. These are three hard races over 3 days. So it's far more than simply producing one good performance. You've got to gauge your runs well. You have to be careful of your position on the track, coming off those tight bends, making sure you don't get in a tangle of legs, making sure you don't fall, which is so easy in indoor tracks. There's so much more to this than simply times that have been run this year. So not trying to be... And actually, that can work in the favour of athletes as well. So if you're smart, if you're a good tactical runner, if you've got a calm head around you, it possibly is more advantageous indoors than outdoors.
Okay, so Greg, there are going to be a lot of eyeballs on this over the weekend because there isn't a huge amount of other sport on, and there has been great build-up and a lot of excitement, so people are going to be watching it. So starting this evening then, who can people look out for?
Well, from the Irish point of view, at 6:30, Michelle Finn, Rio Olympic steeplechaser, she goes in the flat 3,000 metres. She's seventh fastest of the athletes in the heat that she's in. It's a semi-final, effectively. The top four will go through by right. Four fastest losers, as that phrase goes through from the two heats. It's a tough ask for Michelle to elevate herself into that top four, being seventh fastest going in, and it tends to be the case that 3,000 metres being a slower event is less attritional in terms of the physical element of, you know, a lot of athletes on a small track. So it probably will be a true run race. She's going to have to run her best ever 3,000 metres, likely have to break 9 minutes for the first time if she's going to have a chance of making that final. The men's 1,500 metres then, we have three real candidates to make the final, but again, you know, all three could not possibly make the final as well, because 1500 metres, 13 athletes on the track in all four of the heats. So that means that Andrew Cosgren, who's ranked second of the 13 in his heat, heat 2 at 7:30, he has a great chance of going through, obviously, because he's second ranked, but only the first two will go through by right. So he's got to get absolutely everything right to make sure he, you know, secures a top two place and get into that final tomorrow. Otherwise, there are four fastest qualifiers, but it's four heats and 13 in all of those heats. 52 athletes, you know, vying for 10 places. Luke McCann goes in heat 3. The UCD athlete ran brilliantly at the micro meet just less than a couple of weeks ago. Took on so much of the front running himself with 700 metres to go, and was an absolute tough of the track to hold on and clock 3:40.03. He almost broke 3:40, almost running on his own, just a pacemaker to take him through halfway. Very, very gutsy athlete. I like the look of Luke McCann, tall, rangy athlete with a lot of heart. He is fourth fastest ranked in his heat, so he could go through, but he has to run probably the race of his life. But Paul Robinson is also a very interesting one in heat four. Paul was fourth in the European Championships in Zurich Outdoors back in 2014, when he was only touching distance away from a medal, and I mean literally he could have reached forward and touched the bronze medal position. In the interim between 2014 and last summer, there were 6 years of injury and pretty much athletics hell for Paul Robinson, and he came back and won that brilliant duel with Sean Towan for the gold medal at the Nationals last year, which was one of the highlights of those quiet Nationals in front of no spectators. So Paul Robinson has run 3:39 in this indoor season, so he's in real form. He's also ranked fourth in his heat. He may well get through, may well get a chance, and his race craft and race knowledge, he's 30 years of age now, he's a really wily competitor, that might stand to him. So all three 1500 metre men have a chance of making the final, but also all three, if they don't run well, might not make it at all.
Okay, well, Greg, those races will be on the RTE player and on RTE television over the weekend. So I have suitably tempered my expectations for the athletics. Now, I have just clicked on the Almond Palmer Invitational leaderboard, and I see that Rory McIlroy is leading 6 under par. He's carded a round of 66. Can I expect big things from him this weekend, Greg?
Well, you know, am I going to throw cold water on this? No. But look, this is the tournament exactly a year ago. It was the last tournament before they had lockdown in the PGA Tour. And Rory had a great chance of winning on Sunday. And he played with Tyrrell Hatton in the final match. But Rory shot 76 a year ago. Today he shot 66, 10 shots better. Here's a statistic as well you don't hear too often. He today holed 147 feet of putts in his round of 66. So 6 under par. The putter is hot. He putted quite well last week, finished tied 6th in that Workday WGC event in Florida, having missed the cut in Genesis the previous week. And that was his first missed cut in something like 30 events. Very rare to see Rory miss a cut. So look, he's off to a good start. But as we all know, it's Sunday afternoon when it really counts. And especially for Rory, he's on a run now of not winning a PGA Tour event or any event since October of 2019. He just has to get that hump off his back, and I think he could well do it this weekend. I might be guilty of saying that too many weeks, but the reason I say it is because he really loves this course. He first played it in 2015, and as soon as he played it, he realised, why wasn't I playing this event on the PGA Tour more often? Because in the last 4 years he's been tied 6th or better. He won it in 2018 when he birdied 5 of the last 6 holes, so he loves this course. He has his eye in for it. Today he made 5 birdies in a row on his back 9, so he's in prime position to mount a challenge. All you can do in the first day is shoot a good score. He hasn't shot himself out of it, and we just have to hope that this maintains for 4 days, and he's got a chance come Friday evening or Sunday evening.
And just before we finish up, Greg, a very strong finish for Leona Maguire to her first round at the Drive On Championship on the LPGA Tour.
Yeah, now, and this is much, this is really interesting what Leona Maguire is doing. And people have to be very, I think, patient with the progress that Leona is making in her first, well, this is now her second full season as an LPGA player. Last year, she made the Tour Championship, top 65 in the order of merit. And that was a great first season in the LPGA, especially as it was a very difficult season. She started it late because she didn't go over because of the lockdown for the first few events. So she did very well and settled into her role as an LPGA player. And the last, the first 5 rounds that she has shot now in this season are 69, 72, 69, 72. They were the rounds last week that earned her a tied for 16th finish in the tournament that she played last week, the Gainsborough, or the Gainsborough Championship. But here she has started with a 69 in another really stacked field of some of the world's best players, tied for 6th place, 3 under par, and like Rory, she's in position to have a good week. But look, it's the first round, there's a long way to go, but all you can do on day one is put yourself in position, and Leona has done that. And I think we're going to have to just be a little patient with Leona. I don't think we're going to see fireworks from her, but she's one of these people who steadily improves. That was the graph of her improvement throughout her amateur career, when she reached the world number one spot and stayed there for a record 130 weeks. So this is an athlete, and she's a real athlete too. She's one of the fittest golfers that I know out there. And she's got, she's going to be in there for the long haul, I think. And this is just a sign of what's to come, how her consistency over these first 5 rounds of this new season on the LPGA Tour.
Okay, Greg, thanks for all of those updates, and we'll might check in with you later or else tomorrow after the Athletics.
With Green Farm, a 100% natural range of cooked chicken, turkey and beef. Natural protein, your way.
Game on 2FM.
Welcome back. It is a big night in the race for the top four. Liverpool host Chelsea in Anfield in a game which could have huge implications for both teams and their top four aspirations. That kicks off at 8:15. There are two early games already underway. Fulham and Spurs is nil all. Matt Doherty starting for Spurs, and West Brom and Everton nil all as well. 18 minutes gone there. And Darragh O'Shea starting for West Brom. Stephanie Roach is with us. Steph, just before we get to tonight's action, let's just have a quick look back at last night. I think it's fair to say that Manchester United did very little of note at Selhurst Park, bar failing to capitalise on Leicester's drop points.
Hey Marie, yeah, honestly it was terrible to watch, really, wasn't it? I think, like myself, like most people, think football is kind of the only thing keeping us going at the minute, being able to watch it on TV, and last night really wasn't too much to shout about. It was just a boring, dull performance. I think Man United have started to maybe go into games not wanting to lose rather than going in and wanting to win, which is strange because obviously Manchester United have always been that team who attack, and they're always going to try and outscore the opposition. So to watch them in the last few games has been disappointing, I think.
Ole Gunnar Solskjaer said that they need to find that spark again. Where are they going to get it from?
It's a strange one, isn't it? Because I think if you ask any Man United fan, even the most optimistic at the start of the season, you probably wouldn't have thought they could be title contenders this year. And the way it's turned out, they're in second position. Obviously Man City are really kind of running the show with the league at the moment, but it's almost like they just don't have that desire and belief that they can actually go and compete, you know. And that's something that I think most Man United fans are disappointed with, because obviously I think with everything that's gone on this season and the whole COVID situation, and it's probably the one year where it could have been a chance for them to go and get it, you know. So it's a strange one, as I say. I just feel like they don't seem to have that belief. Even Ole, I think he said in an interview there a while ago that he hasn't said they're title contenders. It's the press and the media who are saying it, which I think is disappointing to hear. You know, I think as a club, Man United standard, and obviously things haven't been great over the last few years, but you would expect them to kind of be going into that dressing room and really pushing his players to go and kind of push Man City all the way. But it just seems like they're happy enough to be up there, and I think maybe the goal really is just to try and stay within that top four for the end of the season.
Stephanie, when you hear ex-players like Gary Neville calling them boring, you know, there is an expectation on Manchester United. Do you think someone like Pogba, could he bring a bit of spark to them, or do you just think they're too fatigued at this point? Like you've mentioned, some of them clocking up nearly 42 games already.
Yeah, I think, look, there's been a huge kind of, I suppose, weight on Bruno Fernandes. So since he's come in, he's been absolutely fantastic. And I think United have missed Pogba. I think when he has been in the team, obviously he's had his kind of ups and downs with the club, and he's kind of been inconsistent at times, and obviously issues with his agent and stuff around the club. But he definitely brings that little spark of quality, and I think someone like him has been missing from the team. And as I said, it kind of seems to be that really, if United are going to win games, it's scoring goals in the counter-attack or a piece of magic from Bruno Fernandes. And in fairness to him, we can't do it every game, you know. So I think somebody like Pogba coming back to fitness would be a big boost for Ole, and I think a welcome bonus for the team if he can come back and maybe perform the way he was before he got the recent injury.
Okay, let's move on to tonight. Tottenham have gone a goal up against Fulham, and Stephanie, would you believe it is Dele Alli who has found the net, his first goal since March last year?
Yeah, the forgotten man, isn't it, really? It's a strange one. I think Dele Alli is kind of, obviously Mourinho has kind of spoke out about him a little bit, and it's unfortunate. I think it's a similar situation to Lingard, and Lingard has gone off away from United to get game time at West Ham, and I think Dele Alli himself probably needs that. He needs game time, he needs to be playing, and as you say, he scored tonight, so hopefully he'll be able to kind of keep himself within that team and get a run of games, because he did show promise over the last couple of years, but he just hasn't had that kind of that run of form or run of games really recently, has he?
Well, Mourinho seems to be now getting the best out of his forgotten players, if you throw Bale in there as well. So let's move on to Liverpool and Chelsea, because that really is the big one with the top four place up for grabs, really. And interestingly, it's going to be the very first time that Tuchel and Klopp meet in the Premier League. And I didn't know that it was Tuchel that had taken over at both Mainz and Borussia Dortmund and replaced Klopp. So just an interesting clash even on the line.
Yeah, exactly. And I think he spoke today because I think a lot of people maybe thought they worked together before in the past. And he mentioned that he kind of hasn't worked with him before. It's kind of more so he's come in after he's left. And I'd imagine both of them have a lot of respect for each other. So it's going to be an interesting game. I think the two Germans obviously coming up against each other. And as you mentioned, that race for top four really is kind of getting tight when you look at Leicester and West Ham up there. They're kind of creeping behind the scenes, you know, that way. And obviously Chelsea and Liverpool have the Champions League and that coming up as well. So kind of that can take their focus away from the league. So I think tonight is a big game for both clubs. I think both of them will be looking to get that win and, as I say, get closer to that top four position.
Stephanie, can you see a difference in style from Chelsea since Thomas Tuchel has taken over?
I think he needs time, doesn't he? I think obviously a new manager coming into a new league and he kind of hasn't really held back. Obviously the whole Hudson-Odoi thing where he took him off because he wasn't doing what he asked him to do within the game. He put him on and took him back off again, which is strange to see within any game. But I think it's going to take him time to really stamp his own authority on. I think you can see similar kind of or some sort of changes within the team. But as I said, it's going to be maybe next season where you'll really see his kind of his style of play really come into the fold and the way he wants Chelsea to play, because it's difficult coming in halfway through a season and obviously there's going to be pressures at Chelsea to get into the top four and obviously Champions League football as well. So he's going to kind of have to take his time or jump into the role straight away this season. As I said, I think pre-season next year and coming into the new season will be when you really see Tuchel's team really come to the fore.
It'd be interesting to see as well what Klopp does with his defence. I think we've spoken so much about the, I think, 17 different starting centre-back pairings this season, and potentially tonight it could be 18 if he decides to put Fabinho in with Kabak or leave Phillips there. What do you think he should do?
It's a strange one, isn't it? And I think, look, Liverpool have obviously had been really, really unfortunate injuries over the last couple of months, and that's something that you probably wouldn't have foreseen. When you're seeing Van Dijk get injured, you thought maybe that was going to be the biggest setback for them, but they just had injury after injury. And look, I think at the start of the season I would have said it's going to be between Man City and Liverpool, so I'm sure Liverpool fans are very disappointed to see where they are within the league. But I think Klopp has obviously done a great job with them over the last number of years, and you kind of have to stick with them through the bad times as well. So look, I think it's probably going to be Fabinho and Kabak, I think, tonight. But it's a strange one, isn't it? Because there's so many different pairings there, as you mentioned, and it's hard to kind of to pick a team. And when you have so many defenders getting injured and you're kind of playing players out of position, as I said, they've probably done quite well to kind of stick to be where they are at the moment this year with the injuries that they have had.
Stephanie, you'd know better than anyone, but for Liverpool there, trying to do back-to-back is difficult enough, but if they were to miss out in top four, like, tonight is really a critical game, isn't it?
Yeah, definitely. And I think then Pep Guardiola is getting a little bit of a dig with what you said in terms of you can win a title with a good team, but you need quality players to go and win it twice in a row. And I think, as I said, the injuries that they've had this year has been very, very difficult. But as I said, Klopp has done excellent with them. I don't think the club would be happy if they don't finish within the top four. They're still in the Champions League as well, so there's still chances of maybe them getting through there and doing well. But it's a strange season when you compare them to last year and as I said, the way Klopp had them playing, it's been a strange turnaround this season.
Steph, Donica mentioned back-to-backs there. Wouldn't back-to-back doubles be nice? New season approaching, is that the goal?
Yeah, we'll go for it. We'll try anyway. Yeah, I can't wait to get going, honestly. This last season was a bit strange, the whole COVID guidelines and everything and people not being able to come to the matches. Obviously, we're still kind of in that setup with everything that's going on, but it's just nice to be able to be out playing football and getting set for this new season. I really can't wait to get going.
How is preparation going? Are you over the hump of pre-season or are you still having those horrible sessions?
Thankfully, our kind of matches have started, which is usually the start of kind of easing off the runs and fitness. You kind of get your minutes and that's where you get your fitness from, your match sharpness. So yeah, we're halfway through pretty much. Tough couple of weeks, the first few weeks getting back into the setup and pre-season and running and fitness and just getting your body going again. But thankfully, as I said, the matches have started and kind of sessions now are becoming more fun and based on the matches that we'll be playing. So I'm just, as I said, just delighted to be able to be out kicking a ball and it gives you that focus, because obviously everybody is going through a tough time with everything that's going on. So to be able to be out playing football, I really do count ourselves lucky, and just nice to be getting going again, as I said.
Steph, I know you have training and you need to go in about a minute, and on your corner is probably outside beeping the horn saying, will you come on? But just on a positive note, we saw Kylie Murphy of Wexford Youths out in the media today talking about energy and making that commitment to cover their annual membership fee for the players. And look, it might only sound like a small thing, but you know, we've seen that some clubs are starting to give expenses and things like that. So there's a new, also there's a new SSE have gone, come on board with the league. So there's signs of positivity.
Definitely, and I think it's brilliant to see. I think even with the games being streamed, all the games this season will be streamed on True Links, and everybody can watch the games. And this is the first season that every team, I think, I'm pretty sure no team has to pay their fees, which is a huge step forward, because before it was always paid to play, which is kind of strange to think when you think at the level that some of the players are at, you know. So definitely this season seems to be the real push. And like, I've been around the league obviously before I went away and stuff, and I feel like over the years there's always been a kind of talk that we're getting there and times are changing and it's getting better, whereas I really feel this season with the things that are being put in place, with the new sponsors coming in, and as I said, the games being shown live or live streaming, it really does seem to be actually going in the right direction, which is exciting for myself as a player within the league, and as I said, for a football fan and a women's football fan to be able to kind of say that we're going to be able to see our games all the time and people can access the games, which is really, really good, and hopefully, as I said, a good step forward for the women's game here in Ireland.
Yeah, I think when it comes to growth, Stephanie, you can't beat being able to see the players, so it's absolutely brilliant that they're going to be streamed on Watch LOI. Stephanie, thanks a million. I'll let you go, Anya. I'm sure she's coming out on you if you're listening.
I'm going to myself tonight.
Marie, you're going to have to pay her fine.
We'll talk to you soon. Thanks, Steph.
Game on 2FM with Green Fern. A quick and easy addition to any sandwich, salad, stir fry, or snack. Natural protein, your way.
Game on 2FM.
Okay, down week in the Six Nations, Marie, but there still is international news. Andy Farrell was out today chatting to the media and said he would not run himself out of the running to be involved in a Lions coaching staff. To be fair, I think all of us are just interested, will the Lions go ahead? Yeah. But fair play to him. He has certainly put his hand up. But he's look, I think it's quite important as well for players that you get the best from around the countries. And with the coaching ticket that they're talking about, it really could be... brilliant. Gregor Townsend from Scotland, someone like Steve Borthwick involved in England, you'd never know, someone like Gethin Jenkins with Wales, or even Graham Rowntree. So I know from touring, you want the best guys there, you want to be learning the whole time, but you also want someone in your corner. So I think it's really important for the Irish lads that they have someone like Andy Farrell that's there going in a 50-50 decision in a meeting where, you know, they're debating. Oh, I just thought about it. It wouldn't be great if they were debating 10. Do we go with Johnny Sexton or his son?
Oh, gosh, yeah.
Yeah, so look, good news. But I think whatever about coaching tickets, we just want to know, is the Lions going ahead?
Yeah.
It's an Interpro weekend and Munster take on Connacht. We got the teams Bundy Aki, Dave Heffernan and Ulton Delan come in for Connacht. An impressive team. They've changed halfbacks with Caelan Blade and Jack Carty coming into the team. So should be a really close and good game. Billy Holland has returned from Munster as captain. Stephen Archer will pass out Marcus Horn, which is impressive, but it's a brilliant back three of Shane Daly, Andrew Conway and Mike Cayley. I suppose the biggest news is the halfback pairing for Munster, that Ben Healy and young Craig Casey will go out together. So I'm
that
excited.
Must make you so happy.
Oh, I can't wait for it. Like, that is looking into a crystal ball and seeing Munster of the future. So, but look, it's brilliant. You don't like talking games up, but this is this pool. It's all over after this one. Connacht really have to get something out of this game. I know everyone's going on about conferences and trying to qualify for Champions Cup. Everyone's in it to win it, and if they can you know, take a scalp at Munster tomorrow night, they're right in the shake-up. So looking forward to seeing it.
Okay, well, speaking of in it to win it, we are joined by Jeff Shepherd. Shep.
That was quite the segue. You must have learned that in school.
How are things?
Oh, everything is great over here. It is a gorgeous gorgeous early March day here in the South. Fantastic.
Well, what is happening in the world of sport? I see the Ravens are proposing revolutionary spot and choose overtime procedures. But what does this mean?
Yeah, so I saw this and I just thought this was really interesting. So basically, real quick, you know, if an NFL football game goes to overtime right now, you know, you flip a coin, and the way it sets up is if the teams, whoever gets the ball first, if they score a touchdown, the game's over. If the other team, if you kick a field goal, the other team has to either kick a field goal or score a touchdown to win, or the game's over. There's no sudden death. The Ravens are proposing you flip the coin, and if you win it, you get to pick where you want to put the ball, and then the other team picks whether or not they want to play offense or defense. I think it's fascinating. They were saying basically, you know, if you put the ball, let's say you want to put it at the 10-yard line, you know, going, you know, and you'd have to go 90 yards. Well, you know, that team would probably, you know, they're obviously going to want to pick defense first. They wouldn't want to be on offense first and have to go 90 yards. So it'll increase the level of strategy, and, you know, how are the kickers doing and what's the offensive flow been like for the game. It takes some of the chance out of it. I just think it's really interesting. I had not seen this proposed before. They're going to need to get, you know, 20 or 23 teams to sign off on it, and I don't think it would go into effect this year. It would probably be next year. But I just thought it was really interesting that they'll bring up in front of the competition committee for discussion.
Shep, as a fan, would you like to see something like that? Because sometimes you want sudden death. You want that little bit of jeopardy within it.
Well, yeah, but we don't really have sudden death right now. I mean, we have a modified version of it, if you could have that. I mean, if you score a touchdown, the game's over. But, you know, even if you do score first, you know, if it's a field goal or something like that, then, you know, then the other team gets a chance to get the ball. What this came from, Donners, is a couple of years ago they changed the rule because coaches were complaining, you know, you win the coin toss, or if you lose the coin toss, the other team goes down the field and kicks a field goal and they beat you. The game was over, and you didn't ever have a chance to touch the ball in overtime, and they just kicked a field goal, and so they felt like that really wasn't fair. This would be a big change. I mean, this would be kind of like the first, you know, professional sport in America to really go to something that was, you know, kind of had this much kind of strategy involved into kind of how the overtime is assessed. I'd love to kind of see it, even if they tried it out like in preseason or something like that. I don't even know how you could try something like this out, because, you know, overtime games are just, you know, they only have a couple every year. It would be really interesting to see, though, more discussion about this. And I think that's kind of where they're going to have to go first.
I love the comments under it where people were proposing different things to sort it out, and I thought a good one for the NFL was the idea of a tug of war. And if there was one man you want in a tug of war, it's JJ Watts, and he's on the move.
He is, yeah. You know, we talked about a couple of weeks ago he was going to be leaving the Houston Texans. He announced this week, and he's signing with the Arizona Cardinals. And so, you know, there's a couple of reasons on why he wanted to go there. A lot of it has to do with the quarterback and Kyler Murray, who's young and is clearly going to be a franchise quarterback. You know, he's got DeAndre Hopkins, his former teammate in Houston, who's the number one receiver out in Arizona. Look, I mean, I think, I'm not going to lie, I think weather actually played a big factor into this, because the other teams he was, you know, talking about potentially going to, Green Bay, Pittsburgh, I mean, they all play cold weather games. He's from Wisconsin. He grew up in cold weather. He went to college in Wisconsin. I think he's probably like, yeah, you know, I'll take sunshine 330 days out of the year, you know, in Arizona, as opposed to, you know, some of these other offers. And look, Arizona, I mean, the NFC West with Arizona, Seattle, the Rams, and the 49ers is a tough division already, and it's already getting tougher by the minute, and you add J.J. Watt out there. Arizona is going to have some real expectations. They fell flat last year and missed the playoffs in Kyler Murray's second year. They're going to be expected to compete for the NFC West title, which would then put them in contention, you know, for maybe the bye, you know, in the playoffs, or, you know, a top one or two seed. So there's going to be real expectations for Cliff Kingsbury and the Cardinals next year.
Makes perfect sense. Who wouldn't want sunshine 360 days of the year? What about Russell Wilson, though? Is he going to be starting this season for another team next year, do you think?
Boy. Guy, I mean, this is really taking on some This story's really grown legs the last week or two here. I mean, he clearly is not happy in Seattle, and you've got the Seattle GM talking about potentially, hey, I'll fire Pete Carroll to keep Russell Wilson, excuse me. He has kind of voiced that, you know, he's thinking about four potential landing spots, one of which is the New Orleans Saints, which I was obviously thrilled about. I don't know if they can afford him, but I mean, you know, you have places you have to, then you have to kind of start looking, guys, at like who has assets that they could trade to Seattle to, you know, offset this. And so would the Dolphins be willing to part with Tua after just really 1 year and some draft picks? The Jets have already said they're interested in listening to trade offers for Sam Darnold. It'll depend on whether or not, you know, Russell can veto any trades or anything like that. I mean, he's obviously going to want to go to a contender. He won't want to go to the Jets. But it seems like there's a lot of problems up in Washington, and it doesn't look like they may get solved this year. So, that is a big piece, too. I mean, a franchise quarterback moving around like that kind of in the prime of his career, that is really big news.
Chip, enough of the NFL. Let's get to the real news. Shaquille O'Neal is back, but not in the NBA. He's started wrestling in the AEW. How's he moving?
I think we've lost Shep.
What? We got to the best bit about wrestling and we lose him.
He'd had enough. Fair enough.
He did. He's
given us all the NFL.
Oh, hey, guys,
back.
I'm back.
Shep,
there he
back.
Is. We're talking
my wife was calling.
Just as Dunners was asking the question that he's been waiting to ask for the last 10 minutes.
Shep, if your wife is calling, go.
No, she knows what I'm doing. She just forgot. I've only been doing it for a decade at the exact same time. You think she would have remembered by now?
I hope she's not listening inside the front room you've been talking when you get off here. Shaquille O'Neal is back, but it's in a wrestling role.
Yes. Yes, finally, the news that the world wants to discuss. So Shaquille O'Neal, you know, America's greatest export, it was in the news last night. He made his AEW wrestling debut, and it was phenomenal. I mean, you know, Shaq is fantastic for a variety of reasons. But, I mean, you know, looking at it last night, I mean, he broke two tables in a fall out of the ring. I mean, just took it like a champ, you know? I mean, he was throwing power bombs around. I mean, you know, I'm not exactly sure how much he's going to be involved in this because, I mean, the guy works like, he's got like 17 jobs, okay? I mean, he's the spokesperson for about 10 different companies and, you know, he's on the one of the national NBA broadcast shows. And so now he's dabbling into wrestling again. But I mean, look, I think it was the next logical step. I mean, you know, we had Andre the Giant, we've had The Undertaker. I mean, these are all real big dudes. Shaq, you know, is just another really, really big guy. He's acted before, so, I mean, he'll be able to play along. I think it's fantastic.
Shaq, but how's he moving? 48 years of age, you're right, he's a massive man. You know, just even getting around the ring, taking bangs and knocks.
Right. I mean, so, yeah, I mean, look, so, you know, I mean, he kind of came into, like, you know, America's consciousness, like, when he was, like, 17, 18 years old, like, in the very early 90s, you know, and, you know, he was surprisingly nimble for a guy who was 7'1" and weighed 300-something pounds, you know, so he doesn't weigh that much anymore, but he's still obviously that big. I mean, look, I mean, that is not an easy way to make a living, you know, on the wrestling circuit, especially when you're 48, much less when you're 28. So, you know, I don't imagine he's going to be out there working, you know, 2-3 shows a week. But I think if he's got an in and he can make some appearances and kind of do what he did last night, I don't see why he wouldn't do it for a while.
Chef, just before we let you go, we were speaking earlier in the week about the Zlatan LeBron beef, and it's been making quite a lot of headlines here. But what about stateside? Are people interested in it? Is Zlatan a big deal over there?
So, yeah, I mean, you know, he's a relatively, you know, I'd say big international name for, I think, people that, you know, kind of follow soccer. I mean, I wouldn't say you could stop everybody on the street and they would know who he is. But, you know, this kind of gets back to some of the things. Marie, you weren't on the show one day. It was John and Donners and I. We were kind of talking about just this last 18 months or so that we've seen with athletes and speaking out. You know, there's no way to put the genie back in the lamp there, okay? I mean, it's out. You know, I mean, I think this is something that is going to be something that continues to go on for the right reasons. I think Zlatan's point is, you know, I think maybe in Italy or wherever he's from. Well, I know he's played in Italy. You know, maybe the athletes haven't had a big voice and haven't been able to, you know, kind of push for change. That's not been the case in America. I mean, athletes have led the way in a lot of respects. I do think some of the things that I've seen about LeBron, interestingly enough, is, you know, kind of, he's kind of picked and chosen what he's spoken about. You know, y'all all remember the big to-do about the NBA in China a couple of years ago, and you know, what Daryl Morey tweeted out when he was the GM of the Houston Rockets, and LeBron was completely on the other side of the argument there. And so I think there's, you know, some people have been kind of pointing out maybe a double standard there, but I just think this is how it's going to be from now on. And it's not just athletes, it's everybody. I mean, and social media has opened things up for everybody to have a voice. And I think that's the way of the world moving forward.
Yeah, absolutely. Shep, as always, thanks a million for joining us on Game On. Apologise to Miss Shepherd for keeping you, and we'll catch up with you next week. Quick break.
Appreciate it, guys. Talk to you soon.
Quick break. We're chatting to Shane Carty.
UFM with Green Farm. Fuel your day the healthy way with Green Farm on-the-go chicken bites. 100% natural and packed with protein.
Game on 2FM.
Donica, I'm going to be on Jennifer Zamparelli in the morning to talk about Gordon Elliott, and I'm traumatised after listening to that promo.
I was just thinking about a few of my teammates, and that was a constant source of conversation. So Jennifer's covering everything that pretty much goes on within the dressing room.
Right, well, hopefully it won't be brought up in any way, shape or form tomorrow. Just a little quick update from the athletics. Michelle Finn has finished her 3,000 metre heat. She came ninth in a time of 9:05.44, 3 seconds off her personal best, so unfortunately she's not going to progress there. Someone has texted in and asked, when is Markle English running tomorrow? And from what I can gather from a very quick look, it is at 7:02 tomorrow evening. Now, we are going to turn our attention to Gaelic games. And for anyone that has been following Gaelic games Gaelic football for the last number of years, they will have been familiar with Shane Carthy because he was expected to become a familiar face for football reasons. He has indeed become a familiar face, but it is for something much more important than football. He has shared his mental health journey and helped so many people along the way. He's written a new book, Dark Blue, and I'm delighted to say that he joins us now on the line. Shane, how are things?
Good. Thank you very much for having me on.
Thanks so much for coming on. Look, I want to get to your story because your book is just absolutely fascinating, but I just think I'd like to talk a little bit about lockdown first, Shane. And I think, you know, Dunnick and I have spoken about this quite often over the last few weeks. People are finding this one hard. I don't know why. It just seems to be that it's a difficult one to get through. How are you finding it yourself?
I found it a challenge, as you just touched upon there. Many people have found it a challenge. I think the kind of winter months are, of course, tougher. We haven't had the luxury of the summer days and long summer nights, I guess, to look forward to. But for me personally, I've just found a challenge within it. And, you know, that has kind of excited me in a way that it poses something different each day. And I've just tried to keep a structure to my day, have something to look forward to within it, away from the non-negotiable probably work that I don't want to particularly go to, or I think I speak for most of us saying that. And then I guess have something to stimulate my mind. I'm doing a good bit of reading, as I'm now, as you say, an author of Dark Blue, so I feel like I have to do a bit of reading, I guess.
It's a brilliant book, Shane. It's inspirational, it's hard-hitting, it's incredibly honest. And just one thing I took away from it, we used to always chat on rugby about a toolbox to have the skills to acquire on the pitch, but you talk about a toolbox for controlling your emotions. Can you tell us a little bit about that?
Yeah, and I really like that kind of visual, and we use it in the football world as well, that kind of toolbox to rely upon when things that aren't going so well on the pitch. And I guess I had that visual then for my mental health toolbox, as I coined it back in St. Pat's. And if I were to name my top three things, it probably comes as no surprise as physical exercise is number one. You know, I'm sure all the listeners can relate to the happy endorphins that you release post-exercise. That was something that, you know, got me over 2 years at the worst time of my life. You know, I have that music playlist or a podcast that brings it to happier time and place. And then thirdly, it's actually speaking up to friends now. And you wouldn't believe the weight off your shoulders you get. Like, I kept it within for 2 years, and now just to have that comfort of a conversation with my friends to say, look, I'm a bit stressed here, I'm a bit kind of overwhelmed with stuff. But I think it's important to say as well, it's very individualistic. You know, what works for me may not work for you, but it's about putting into that toolbox what works for you and makes you tick every single day.
So Shane, when you were in your late teens, things became difficult for you, and you mentioned there St. Pat's, so you spent 11 weeks there, and I think from reading your book and something that I think probably a lot of people that follow sport and you know are interested in people as well, it's really hard to almost marry the image of somebody being so successful on the pitch and doing these amazing things and winning Man of the Match awards and being brought into Dublin panels and sitting on benches in All-Ireland finals to somebody that is really, really struggling.
Yeah, and that was the difficulty that I had. You know, that was the difficulty that I guess was the big manifestation of 2 years of an internal journey that I wouldn't wish on my worst enemy. And as you touched upon there, you know, in St. Pat's, when I came to the realization that, look, there's so many different people of all ages, both male and female, young and old, who are going through this. And, you know, I shied away from the pedestal a lot of the times that I was seen up on. This man living this sort of idyllic life, as you say, representing Dublin and winning all Ireland. But I guess I had to step up in that pedestal when I was in St. Pat's after a couple of weeks of a bit of clarity around my own mental health, and to speak up to let people know this man living this idyllic life can go through a difficult time, so can you.
Just on it, Shane, like we said, the book is incredible and we all have enough on our plate to handle our own problems. But since writing the book, have you kind of found that, you know, other people are leaning on, you know, to, you know, with things and I know you say you chat in primary schools, but how do you look after that you don't take on too much or take on other people's worries?
Yeah, and that's absolutely spot on in terms of, you know, I've been very careful. I've actually been back to see my psychologist over the last number of weeks, just as the way I see it, as a little kind of NCT for my mind to make sure I'm all there, to make sure I'm on top of my own mental health. Because as much as I want to help people, as you say, you know, coming to me with their problems and issues that I can hopefully, you know, lean on from my experience and help them with, I have to be careful with that. I'm not taking on too much, and I'm trying to find a sweet spot. I still am, because I really, really want to help people out there, and in particular around these kind of COVID times. But no, as you say, it's one of those where I'm looking after myself and kind of just checking in with my psychologist to make sure I'm all there for these next kind of couple of months.
But even Shane, like writing the book and going to primary schools and having the talks and going on the radio and going on the telly without even taking on anybody else's troubles, you're helping people because you're sharing your story, and what you're doing and what you're talking about is going such a long way to normalise mental health and mental health struggles.
Yeah, and that was my hope from the very outset. I guess, you know, the reason why I took upon this book was, you know, number one, and I have it written down in my notes when I do have kind of difficult days myself, was to save a life, and I hope I've done that 10 times over. And you know, just from the messages from people far and wide, as I say, it's been absolutely incredible. I genuinely have been blown away, and I just hope to kind of give that kind of voice for many people who are suffering in silence, just like I did for many years, and to allow them to build up the courage to speak up and you know, begin their journey as I did so many years ago.
Shane, obviously, like, of course you want people to be aware and to talk up, but a massive takeaway for me from your book was what your mom did with you. She just listened, you know, she didn't judge, and then she got the support around you. I've always worried that, you know, someone could be reaching out and I don't know what to do, and you just gave a brilliant example of what your mom did.
Yeah, and I try to let people know, you know, from my own experience and exactly what my mom did, you know, that little arm around the shoulder. And to be honest with you, it's the most smallest of gestures, the likes of that from my mom, an arm around the shoulder, a pat on the back when I was back in with the Dublin senior football team, where Paul Flynn came back and just said, look, good to see you back. And it's the smallest of gestures. You don't have to be the doctor or psychologist. You don't have to give them all the answers. But it's just knowing that they have that listening ear that will be in the shape of someone on the other side of the room as a springboard just to convey the problems that they may be going through.
Desi Farrell is quite prominent in your book as well, and I'd say quite prominent in your young life. He seems to have featured in quite a lot of the big moments, but he was really there for you when you needed him.
Yeah, and I guess if you talk about kind of, you know, confiding in someone, you know, away from my mum and dad, as it were, and my sisters, you know, Desi was massive in my kind of journey back from the edge, I guess. And I'm hugely, hugely grateful that I had that man in the shape of Desi Farrell and the support systems that he allowed me to kind of, you know, jump on in terms of St. Pat's and psychologists thereafter. So, look, it's absolutely fantastic what he's done for me. I'd love to repay it tenfold by putting on that Dublin jersey and representing him again and lifting the Sam Maguire. That'd be absolutely fantastic. And that's my hopes and aspirations, I guess, for the future looking ahead.
Some of us are guilty of making sports the most important thing, or kind of thinking it is the most important thing. Where does it rank for you now, just in terms of relevance in life?
I guess it's part of many boxes that I have now in my life, be it my personal life, my social life, my college life, my work life. And I think, you know, prior to St. Pat's, I simply only had a sporting life, and that was the only thing going on in my head. I was so tunnel visioned that I was so naive, and nothing else was going on in my world. And only when I kind of came to the depths of despair that I realised there's so much more to life than sport. Yes, it has given me so much, and it will hopefully give me a lot more as I go on, but it's not the only thing. I guess if you have the other junctures in your life and boxes kind of ticked, you can actually then help your sporting career as a turnabout in that.
So where are you now with football, and, you know, maybe getting back to repaying Desi and lifting that Sam and pulling on that blue jersey again?
Yeah, so I've been lucky, and I'm very glad to say that over the last number of weeks, I've been in contact with Desi, and he's invited me back into the team, albeit, you know, on a temporary basis, to see how I do in the National League. Hopefully, I'm speaking for a lot of probably Gaelic players and sports people in general. We're going to see sport sooner rather than later. And yeah, that'll just be my platform now in the National League, see how I get on, and yeah, let's hope I get that championship place come the summertime then.
I think everyone around the country would rather you went cutting Desi Fitz's backyard or helping out in another way than talking out again. But just on it, because so many times we talk about coaches and we look at them forming systems or coming up with tactical skills or creating a good environment, just that man management side of it, which is kind of a label for caring. Can you give us an example with Desi and yourself?
Yeah, I guess from Desi's point of view, I guess, you know, I very much, when I started out, knowing who he was in terms of the man who gave me my first shot, my Dublin career, he was very just much a manager to me. And then only thereafter that, the little kind of touch points in terms of how's the family getting on, how are you getting on, you know, outside of football. It was just those little kind of touch points that it was very personable to me. He was actually taking an interest in the player. And that actually came from Jim Gavin as well. His mantra was, you know, person first and then the player. And I think that was just manifested on from Desi's kind of mantra. And I think that was hugely, hugely beneficial, I guess, from getting the best out of players then, because you just wanted to go the extra yard for someone who cares so much about you outside the field.
So true.
Shane, I think you're going to make such a massive difference. Whether you lift the Sam Maguire or not, you've completely made your mark on lots of people and lots of the Gaelic Games community as well. We wish you the best, and sure, look, hopefully we'll see you in action in the National League, or look, we don't know if there's going to be a National League, but we'll see you in action at some stage anyway. Thanks so much for taking our call.